Hello, 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 and welcome into Section 119. Today we have an awesome show going on, but let me introduce you to my co-hosts.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Trevor.
And I am Jaden. And we're just here ready to talk some Aggie sports. All kinds of good stuff going on, but I guess that's not really the case right now. But we'll talk about the Aggie basketball team, the road trip they were just on. Towards the end of the show, we'll even talk a little bit of Aggie football. I know we've taken a little bit of a break from that.
But the wounds have healed slightly enough to reopen them.
I don't know if any wounds have healed yet for me, but we'll reopen those wounds in an attempt to heal them.
We'll at least pour lemon juice on them.
Fair. So if you stay tuned until the end, we'll talk a little bit about Aggie football. First thing first, Utah State coming off of a two-game road trip for the basketball team. Probably less than desirable. Agree?
I totally agree in that, the second game at San Diego State was on Saturday was kind of crazy. You know, it doesn't help when you only score 10 points in the first 10 minutes of the second half. And the other team scores 20, and they already had 8-point lead on you.
I think we're all in agreement. So I think that's the end of the show, right? I mean, we just did not play well. What else can we say?
On to Aggie football. That was disappointing season. What do you guys think? Disappointing, right?
Yeah, true.
All right, thanks for tuning in this week.
Signing out.
You know, really, like, it's sad, but it could be somewhat summed up like that. I have like still a little glimmer of hope for the basketball team, but the thing that I'm most excited for right now, and I don't know if you guys agree with me on this or not, is the Spectrum Magic Night this Saturday as Utah State takes on who we got Colorado State.
It depends on what you define as excitement, I guess. It's kind of like it could be good, but it also could be like M. Night Shyamalan movie bad.
And this
hey, have you ever seen The Village? A little sidebar here.
No.
Not that I can remember.
It's not a good movie, but it's a movie that you have to see.
I don't really like those movies.
See, this idea...
Wait, is this like a bad, but have to see in like a Sharknado way?
No,
but you have to see in like a Ghost Rider and Ghost Rider 2 kind of
way. I didn't say it was bad. I just said it wasn't good. It's not bad either. But just watch it. This is your homework for the week.
I'm not.
And next week,
I might watch Split because that one actually does kind of look somewhat good. That one's intrigued me a little bit. But anyways, back to non-M. Night Shyamalan, or however you pronounce his name, because I'm probably butchering that.
Shyamalan.
Shyamalan Ding Dong.
You can't say that on the show.
I saw the promo from The Herd about those shirts, and if you haven't seen them, if you've seen the Spectrum seats, you've seen them.
Go to the USU Herd Twitter page. And if nothing else, I love this because of the creativity of it.
This is probably a Blake idea. But it wouldn't surprise me.
The first 2,000 students in the Spectrum get Spectrum seat colored shirts. Now, maybe my love for this comes from my initial love of the Spectrum seats. And I think that Daniel feels differently about these than I do, but I absolutely love the Spectrum seats.
Let me explain. I like the Spectrum seats in that they're unique. Like, honestly, is there any other stadium or arena that we know that we can think of, I guess, in America that's like that? That has just these puke colored seats. Saying that they're puke colored seats.
This could be a puke out.
See what they I think it would be better if they would have gave us,
That would be much better, actually.
It'd be more funny if they give us, like, long-sleeve shirts rather than T-shirts, so it look like there are all these bunch of heads sitting out there on the watching the game.
You're right.
See, we're just going to be camouflaged there. So it's good. The stadium's going to look empty.
Well, that's a good thing.
So you don't know which ones have someone in it and which ones don't.
It'll look empty. Exactly. People watching on TV, they're like, oh, no, they're having their puke out. So it's not actually empty. It's just the students wearing puke-colored shirts when actually there's only, like, 30 students there.
That is a good point.
So what we should do is print off, like, heads, get, like, cardboard heads, and put them on top of the seats so then it looks packed.
I like the idea. I'm not sure how the execution would look.
I just think, okay,
we could do that, but rule, it has to either be Nicolas Cage's head or Chad Kroeger from Nickelback. Those are the only two heads we can use across the entire stadium.
They don't even look like students.
Exactly. But from, like, on TV, nobody's going to realize that until they, like, zoom into, like, the announcers, like, playing the game. And in the background, you just see this, like, cutout of Nicolas Cage.
I don't even think this game's on TV.
Or what? What?
Oh, okay, it's on Campus Insiders, so.
Yeah, it's on that's internet. Kind of TV.
Only Aggie fans will be watching, and I guess Colorado State fans.
They exist?
Not around here, but... I just love this for, like I said, I love the creativity. I love the herd trying to get more people to come to the games, and I love free stuff. I'll wear this shirt proudly. I hope I get a really nasty burnt orange color. The one thing that I hope does not come as a result of this is down the road, like, say, next week we're playing Nevada, I hope that nobody shows up wearing one of those awful, hideous t-shirts when it's not a puke out.
See, that's my part of my problem with it, is we always talk about, like, if it's a whiteout, wear white. If it's just a regular game, wear blue. Yeah. Probably the problem with that for some students is either they don't have the money or they don't want to spend what money they do have on a shirt, even though it's only, like, $4. So, I mean, I know. You have 2,000 shirts. That costs some money for the program to make. I'd almost wish they would just do blue, just even though it's not as maybe cool or unique as this, just so that there's more blue out there that people choose to wear for other games. But
I guess if they get the pewter one, it won't be as bad if they get like the yellow or two oranges shades.
I'm thrilled. And I can't wait to see you two guys wearing nasty puke-colored T-shirts.
How do you know we're going to be one of the first 2,000?
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is, like, are the sizes going to actually fit us, or is it going to be, like, Derek trying that small shirt on at football games again? Like, that's also the problem we have to think. But
we
anyways,
all hope not.
Yeah, we don't want to see that again. Anyways, that kind of distracts, or I guess illustrates the program as well, because, I mean...
I think that this whole thing is just a big distraction.
It is. It is.
They're if we were sitting here right now at, I don't know how many games have we played. If we're sitting here at like 17-0 or 16-1 or something, like nobody's making spectrum colored T-shirts because we're winning. But
I mean, but we're talking about that instead of, you know, the fact that we're dead last in the Mountain West right now. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not too far behind. I mean, we're half a game behind five teams. But
given it's early. But right before the show started, you know, we were looking over the schedule that Utah State has coming up. Whew, it's brutal. I mean, yeah, the Mountain West is down this year, but there's still a lot of, like, decent to good teams. So for those of you who haven't looked, yeah, three out of our next four games are home. So that is nice. And,
we'll get a little bit
of a rest. And we've got a bye this, I don't know if they call it a bye, but we're not playing
an off day instead of Wednesday.
Exactly. So, but this Saturday, Colorado State, who is a pretty solid team, then going at New Mexico, who is always, you know, the pit is formidable. You never, just waltz into there and get a win.
Unless you're Nevada.
at Fresno State, who has turned some serious heads at home against Fresno State. At home against Nevada, who I think is the best team in the conference, far and away, bar none.
Maybe Boise State, but...
I would go with Nevada. But then at Boise State, at Colorado State, and then back home to play the two teams that we just lost against on the road, Wyoming and San Diego State, and then at Nevada. I mean, that's as far as Mountain West scheduling goes, that is... just about the most brutal stretch that I think you could possibly have in front of you.
But just put it this way, at least the last three games of the conference play are the not-so-good San Jose State and the we should be better at home against Air Force and then the at UNLV. So
no question there.
So I mean, but I mean, so, still, it's a very real possibility that we could go 3-9 mm-hmm. over the rest of the season. And frankly... we couldn't really even be too mad about it, even. I mean, granted, yeah, we'll be mad that the team underachieved and didn't steal a couple of those games. But again, like you said, the next nine games are going to be tough opponents.
And I think that looking forward at it like that just puts so much more importance on these next three or four games. Like I said, three out of the next four at home. So Colorado State this weekend. To me, this is must win is like an overused word because it can mean so many different things. But as far as like making this season at least acceptable, this could be a must-win game because you're coming off of a break. Colorado State is out on the road this week. They've got Fresno State on Wednesday and then coming here, I would imagine, directly after. So they're going to be tired. Colorado State's a good team, but at home, after a break, I think we have to win this game.
Plus, you look at it, like I've said, I don't know why not a lot of people in the Mountain West know this, but Colorado State lost three pretty key rotational players due to academic ineligibility for the rest of the season.
Exactly. So, I mean, we're catching a little bit of a break there.
Yeah, catching a bit of a break. But, I mean, if they lose that game, which still is possible because, I mean,
still not even though game.
That, like, those three key rotational players are still bench players. They just still played a decent amount of minutes. I mean, if they lose that game this season, you're going to have a lot of people saying, like, well, why is Tim Duryea the coach? Why do we still have him for the rest of the season? The program's not going to get better. We're losing Jalen Moore after the season. I mean, I don't really think that's a really – even if we go winless for the rest of the way, I still don't think the program's really in a ton of trouble. But
yeah,
it would still raise a lot of questions.
So Colorado State then at New Mexico, which it's a team we beat here, but again on the road it's always a different story, especially this year with this team. And then Fresno State, Nevada. So, and both of those at home. That is like somehow the easier part of this 8 or 9 game stretch because we have more at home, but still some really tough teams. And it's going to be tough for the team to get, I think 2 wins is going to be a pretty good showing in these next 4, which is just not good.
Yeah. It all depends. You know, I mean, this is a dust statement, but how we shoot. I mean, on the road, you look at all the games we lose, pretty much we go on these massive droughts where we don't score for like 7-8 minutes. And we have those at home too, but I don't think they're as profound or like as extreme. You have like, and you also have games where like Kobe McEwen goes nuts and scores like 24 in the second half and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's the bonus, as you pointed out. I mean, 3 of the next 4, 5 of the next 7 are at home. If we don't get at least 3 of those at home, I mean, that's a doomsday scenario for this team, I think.
What's really kind of frustrated me about this team recently is that, like, they've shown at different points throughout the season what they can be, and they've shown that they can be such a good team. Some of these players have shown that they can be all Mountain West type players, and then we go and just lay an absolute egg like we did against San Diego State, or, you know, going to Laramie, and at least that one was closer, but it was still a bad loss. That is the frustrating thing to me, because in past years I didn't really have any expectations, or at least the last few years, because they've been somewhat rebuilding. And they still are, and they've still got a lot of young guys, but we've seen like at a few different points, like against New Mexico, where it's like, all right, we're there. Just stick another freshman in the lineup and we'll keep winning games. But it's just shown that there's still so many growing pains and so many things that this team's got to go through, and we're not quite to that level.
Yeah, that's completely fair. I mean, sports is like super reactionary, I think, especially when you're a fan of the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
which is why last week I was like all talking this team up, saying we could go finish fourth or third or fourth in the conference. And this week I'm all poo-pooing on them. But
yeah, I mean, if we were talking about even just like maybe not BYU because we hate them, we just say they suck. But if we were talking like
they do,
like about like San Diego State or like a Colorado State. I mean, granted, we don't like them because they're conference foes, but I think we'd be a lot more, I guess, stable on our predictions for those teams, I guess. But against Utah State, it's just like every week, it's just like, okay, yeah, we see a really great game from, like, Sam Merrill when he finally starts, or just Kobe McEwen keep having good games. Dargenton looks good in a game, but then a game later, it's just, it's like they forget how to play basketball almost. I mean, again, that's probably just a lot of youth and they need a lot of experience, but part of it's also just like, is that experience actually going to help that really? I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers, I guess. I'm just asking the questions.
You know what is going to help? It's going to help when all of the Colorado State players are discombobulated by all of the Spectrum nasty colored shirts.
All the puke.
That, I mean, that could seriously play to our advantage, right?
It depends on if they bring out the Harambe picture for the free throw distraction. Oh. I mean, that's still...
I don't get that either, but...
Needs to go.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we need... That's I guess, a side tangent. That's one of my things about the Herd right now. I mean, I like some of the effort they're doing, like, especially with this T-shirt thing. I mean, we can all agree, I think this is one of the better things the Herd's done in the past couple of years, at least in terms of unique... Yeah. At least in terms of unique stuff, promo, try to get people out to games. It's better than, I think, just... Them a constantly blackout. Constantly being shirtless at a game and stuff like that. I mean, this is an improvement, but I think that's part of what
that's called a whiteout, Daniel.
Dude, don't. Okay, that was a good one, but that's part of the thing with Spectrum Magic. One, the team does need to win. That's going to bring it back more than anything else. But two, it's going to take some like spontaneity. I mean, and ingenuity from some of the fans as well. Some new stuff. New tricks, and maybe dressing up in puke colors is one of those things. I don't know.
We could make it an every game thing. To me, I kind of feel like 95% of bringing the Spectrum back to Magic or whatever you want to say, I feel like 95% of that is entirely on the team's shoulders. If you win, people will come. That's all there is to it. And just the like other 5% is the, you know, the wild first few rows. It's the innovators, the Herd coming up with cool things like this. And so, like, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating because, like, the Herd and a lot of the fans that have been there for games, you know, we've already seen some crazy stuff like Mr. Telfair just about quitting the team when we played Idaho State and getting suspended for a few games because he was so mad after we made him get a technical, like Dunkin' Donuts from Boise State flipping off the crowd. Like, the people that show up are like, they're bringing it this year. There's just not enough people. To get the rest of the people, the team's just got to win. Like, and I'm not trying to like direct that. I'm not trying to direct this at or like,
not blaming the players.
I'm not trying to blame the players, I guess. But the other day on Twitter, Kobe McEwen, and Kobe's great. You know, he's one of the biggest things we got going for us right now. He posted on Twitter, wow, the Spectrum used to be crazy, used to be packed, after like the Herd posted out a video of Spectrum memories. And like, I could see why the team would be kind of frustrated that maybe that's what they thought they were signing up for, and that's not what they're getting. But at the same time, that was back in the days when the team would lose 4, 5, 6 games the entire season and never lose at home.
I don't think I'm going to disagree on at least a part of that, that they think that's what they were signing up for, because the Spectrum hasn't been like that for a while now.
I guess that is fair. It's been a good 6 or 7 years.
Maybe when like Jalen Moore entered the program like 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it is, maybe that's kind of... Maybe we were at that point. But, I mean, since then, I mean, Spectrum hasn't been at that state. And it's, I mean, that's, I think that's the goal of the program, really, is more than even just wins and losses, really, is to get it back to that state, which, granted, is going to take a bunch of wins. But, I don't know, that's a major plot line, I think, over the course of the rest of the schedule here. I mean, if, hypothetically speaking, we go 4-0 over the next stretch, or... Here, let's find a good. Let's go 6-0 over the next stretch. We come home. We're playing Wyoming. I think the Spectrum would be pretty well packed at that point.
Yeah, no, I mean, agree with you there.
But
and not to try and go on another rampage about this as I've done in the past, but it just, I absolutely don't understand how every single year Utah State has 4, 5, 6 home games during Christmas break. You want the Spectrum to be great, and part of that's Utah State because it's the end of the non-conference scheduling. Part of it's the Mountain West. if you want the Spectrum to be back to great, you can't have students missing 5 or 6 games while they're back home for Christmas break. And the team won't have any advantage during that time either.
I can understand, like, the non-conference games being there like that, but, you know, because they don't really go anything on where you're as much on where you're seated for your conference tournament and stuff. But, you know, the Mountain West kind of needs to look at it too, saying, hey, why do we give them like a bit? Why do we always give us like 3 or 4 and like 1 road game while we're out? Why can't they at least split up and say, you know what, while schools are out, we'll give them 1 home, 1 away until they're about in, and then we can do it a little more that way.
Honestly, I think it's probably just the money, and this just kind of occurred to me, but I mean, Christmas break is kind of when basketball, NBA and college, really kind of starts to take a bit of a national spotlight. So, I mean, past couple of years, admittedly, we haven't been terrific. So is that kind of the basketball that at home the Mountain West wants to be putting on a national spotlight, really, when we're playing like Air Force with a sparse crowd? I mean, granted, it's going to be sparse with every school, but it's probably a little bit less with maybe like a San Diego State or Boise State. So that probably plays a little bit into it, I think. But, I mean, again, that also does kind of screw us over. But
yeah, and again, like, I don't want to go too much into that because I've ranted about it in the past, but I guess just the bottom line is Utah State right now is at a point in the season where they can either turn a corner and continue some of the brilliance that we've seen at points throughout the season and make that a more regular thing and be able to win some of these games, especially these next 4, and turn this into a season where at the end we're going, you know, maybe we didn't win the conference championship, but I still feel decent about this team, and going forward I'm really excited. Or they could go and lose, I don't know how many games we have left, but, you 12. Know, go lose 9 or 10 of those final 12 games, and we'll be sitting here looking like, well, next year maybe we'll be able to finish with the 5th or 6th seed.
I think here's an interesting parallel, which does we don't have to travel far to go to, but the football team several years ago, 2-5, I think, going into that Hawaii game. I mean, team could have just like crumpled, and we probably wouldn't have blamed them too much because, I mean, 4-8 the previous 2 seasons, we weren't really expecting that. And then all of a sudden, come back in that game, 5 straight wins, bowl game. I think And that also spurred the football program to its best point in 40 years as well, since Merlin Olsen was actually not playing on Merlin Olsen film. It was actually him physically on the field. I think this is that point for the basketball team. I mean, if they come out and they go 8-4 the rest of the way, I think that's really good momentum, 1, for the conference tournament, but 2, for next year with a bunch of young players returning. But, I mean, if they just crumple and they go 4-8 or worse over the rest of the schedule, I mean, no one's going to be happy about that. Tim Duryea, at the very least, will probably be going into next season on the hot seat. And, I mean, granted, I think we're in a good spot. Kobe McEwen, to me, is the consensus Mountain West player, the freshman of the year right now. And I think we do have some good pieces with Merrill and Argenton. But, I mean, we can only get by for so long, which is the potential. Like,
exactly.
There's got to be
a potential. Is just a word.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Denver Nuggets, Timberwolves, Lakers, they all have potential, but until they actually start winning, nobody's going to give a crap. It's the same thing with the Aggies, I think. And I'm going to be patient with them.
So what you're saying is that the Timberwolves won't end up with the
They're not the 5th seed. I'm still holding them out for the 8th seed. I still think they've got a good shot for that, but that's another story entirely. But I mean,
8.5 seed. So does literally anybody.
Yeah, but still, come on.
It is, sorry.
Anyways, I mean, Utah State, I'm going to be patient because, I mean, again, super young. I like the talent that Duryea is bringing in. So I'll probably still give him another year or two if we don't figure it out soon. But it would be a really, really encouraging sign for the program if we even just finish 500 for the rest of the year with this schedule that we have, at least.
After football season, we came on the show and said we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus from talking football for a little while. And I think that fans were tired of hearing about it. I was tired of thinking about it. I was so upset and disappointed with the team that we saw on the field last year. But now we're, what, 2 months out, more than 2 months out from the final game, right? No, less. I can't do math. Yeah, no, I don't even know what month it is. About 2 months out.
2 months.
And we're seeing some new things going on in the program, a lot of recruiting stuff, a new coach that was hired. So I think it's about time to come back and talk a little bit of Aggie football. Not too much, because we still have, what, 226 days till we kick off against Wisconsin. But what's your take on this recent offensive coordinator hire?
So what you're saying is you're sick of talking about basketball now.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have a short attention span.
ADD.
It gets shorter when I'm angry.
Fair enough. I guess if we're going by the one-word game with Yost as the new offensive coordinator, I would say my word is probably stoked. I mean, you look at his past pedigree, at least for me, it speaks for itself. He's done some pretty good things at several different places. Very good offenses. This is a guy that coached Chase Daniel at Missouri, Blaine Gabbert as well. Brad Smith before those two is also another good quarterback. And then spent the past 4 years split at Washington State for three and then Oregon for the past one. So, I mean, I think it's a good hire for Utah State, given where the program's at right now. I'm not sure there's a better person we could have gotten at this point in time. So, I mean, to get this person, I think it's a step in the right direction.
I totally agree. I felt like after the season, there was a pretty good chance that we didn't hire an offensive coordinator. And, like, if you would have asked me right after the last game what one of the things I thought absolutely had to happen and one of the things that would get me a little bit excited about next year would be, I would have said we need a new offensive coordinator. Not that, you know, people put a lot of heat on Luke Wells. I don't know if he's a good coach or not. From everything I've ever heard, Matt was the one doing most of the play calling. And so I love exactly what John Hartwell did. Came out and said, all right, we're making some changes in the program. One, we're going to have a new offensive coordinator, and he's going to be calling the plays. And then going out and hiring a guy like David Yost, who, pretty big profile guy, you know, coming from a Pac-12 school. He's done some good things. He's coached some really good quarterbacks in his day.
And that hair.
And that hair is just glorious. That'll give us an automatic boost. I think that, like, that was probably one of the highest things on my priority list that the team needed to do this offseason. And so I'm thrilled that they did it and got a guy like this to come in.
Also, I think it's a good timing because it's probably too late to salvage, like, Kent Myers or Damian Hobbs to be a great quarterback. I mean, I think Yost might be able to salvage them enough to be serviceable next year, but we'll see for that. But, I mean, we got several good quarterbacks in the system, like on the younger branches. You've got, of course, Columbia coming in, Jamal Evans as well.
Love.
And so you've got Yost, who looks to be a pretty good quarterback guru. He's going to have quite a bit of time to groom some of these kids, as long as he doesn't leave, which that's the risk, I think, with this hire. That's the risk. Anytime you bring in a high-profile guy that's kind of jumped around places is – They jump around places. So, I mean,
well, and the other thing, one of the next highest things on that list that I was talking about is I want to see every single position battle, whether it's quarterbacks, whether, you know, I'm not just singling out the quarterbacks because that's the most prolific and the most talked about position, but whether it's quarterbacks, running backs, linebackers, whatever, I want every single position to be a battle for the starters. I feel like last season there weren't nearly enough adjustments made with the lineup, and it was just kind of the guys that were starting at spring camp were starting in the final game of the season. So I'd really like to see those battles open right up.
I agree with that. Let's insinuate a little bit, or kind of think about what went on in the meeting with Matt Wells and John Harwell, because obviously they had a pretty big meeting and some things happened in it. And you've got to think that Harwell kind of probably laid down a couple of things with Wells, because I think that's one of his problems, is he's a little bit too loyal. We saw that with the Chucky Keaton, Kent Meyer situation. Saw that with a couple of players who, frankly, maybe should have had a less playing time, but never really happened. Or people that should have received more playing time mm-hmm. and didn't really happen. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing. And we're going to have to wait those 200-some-odd days until the season starts to actually see. But see how much Wells has actually changed on those fronts.
226.
226. So, I mean, is he going to be open with – if a player isn't doing well, is he going to be willing to put somebody else in? Is he going to be willing to feed the hot hand? I mean, we got 226 days to talk about it, but
at very least, though, at very least, this does give me at least a glimmer of hope for next season. No, like, I don't think we're going to be competing for a Mountain West title or anything next year, or even a Mountain Division title, but this does make me think, you know, maybe next year we will be able to get back to 7 or 8 wins. Maybe we could get back to bowl eligible. Not like I'm going out and putting money on this or betting that it's going to happen, but it does give me some hope. You bring in a really good, young, knowledgeable offensive coordinator who's had some big-time experience, and you just never know. I mean, to me, college football is so, so much about coaching. Probably more than any other sport, in my opinion, or any other level of any other sport. And so you get a good coaching staff. Look at what PJ Fleck did at Michigan. Look at what Gary Anderson did here. A good coaching staff can make all the difference in the world. And, well, I know everyone, or at least probably 95% of Aggie fans, are down on Matt Wells right now. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least somewhat down on him. There is still a part of me that thinks, you know, maybe he just had a tough hand last year, and maybe with a good new offensive coordinator and a lot of young guys on the team, maybe things can turn around.
In other words, by the time that we actually hit the season opener, we're going to have talked ourselves into like an 11-win season as a possibility.
Dude. Yeah.
It's going to happen.
every year.
It happens every year. We'll be disappointed, but I mean, I think a football program, or really a basketball program, baseball, any program in an athletics department really starts with the athletics director, I think, making it a priority. I mean, looking around the country, Rutgers, they give absolutely no priority to sports, and that's why they suck at everything. Same thing with, like, Iowa State and some of those other places. The money that's going to it, the attention that's given to it, isn't high, and that's why a lot of their teams struggle a lot. So, I mean, I think it's really... That's the first good sign for me, I think, is that John Harwell looks like he's a no-nonsense guy. I mean, we miss out on a bowl game one time. First time in like 6 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And already we're seeing some pretty good-sized changes in the coaching staff and everything. So at the very least, as long as we can keep Hartwell, I think eventually we might have to go through and maybe another coach if this doesn't work out. But, I mean, having an athletic director that's going to make it a point of emphasis to make sure the football team has the resources and the drive to be good, I think that's a good step, and I think we should be able to reach back there at least within a couple of years.
I can go with you on that, on Hartwell, you know, doing the steps on it with only missing it missing the bowl game this 1 year, but you know, maybe he looked back into last year too and looked, hey, wait a minute. You know, we kind of did a big slide, and we barely made a bowl game last year. We were 6-6, and we didn't even go in and win that bowl game. So it looks like we are doing a slide. So I'm going to step in now before it gets too low in there.
Well, and you know, sports is such a knee-jerk reaction kind of business. And I know most Aggie fans were calling for the head of Matt Wells at the end of the season. And of course, financially, that wasn't really an option, but and I've been on both sides of this line, but looking back, you know, at this point, and I'm just kind of glad that even if it wasn't for the finances of it, I'm kind of glad that we have kept Matt Wells around for another year, because I don't know. Maybe it's just the curiosity in me. I just want to see what can happen next year with him sticking around. It was just 1 year without a bowl game, given it is certainly a downward trajectory. But I want to see him with a good offensive coordinator, assuming that's what this is. I think Frank Miley is going to become a very good defensive coordinator, and he could become a future head coach, maybe not at Utah State, but somewhere. And clearly to me, if we do not have a winning season or a bowl season, Matt Wells has to go. But I'm glad that he gets another chance.
I look at it kind of this way. Matt Wells obviously deserves some of the blame for going 3-9 last year. Like, that's a given.
No question.
But you look, I mean, you could even arguably give more blame to a pretty porous secondary that, even though we finished like pretty good in like passing yards per game, passing yards per completion we were terrible at. I mean, we got gashed. If we gave up a passing play, it was going to go for big yardage. You can also blame, I guess, a defensive line that didn't get a ton of pressure. That's related to that as well. An offensive line that was almost as porous as the secondary. And then, of course, the QB play from Kent Myers and also Damien Hobbs was less than stellar, to say the least. And you look at it, across those, we're getting a couple good defensive line recruits. Secondary, a lot of the players that were the problem are leaving. So we're going to have a couple new players, all of which actually are going to be guys that Matt Wells recruited. He's still going to have to deal with Kent Myers and Damien Hobbs, but hopefully David Yost is going to be able to work with that. This is going to be the time, I think, where Matt Wells is not going to have another excuse. There's not going to be like, oh, well, this was a player that I was just given when I got here. This is just like somebody just not playing to their potential. This is going to be the time where he's had the problem rise up and he's had time to solve it. And if he doesn't, I mean, it's still going to cost quite a bit to let him go after next season. But, I mean, there's not going to be any argument at all, not even curiosity, that can save him. Like, it's going to rest on him, because even if you can fault the players, he's the one that brought the players in. And that's
totally agreed.
Yeah, there's another thing. Another thing going along with you can't just blame Matt Wells on it. You know, look at our starting quarterback, you know, Snapchatting at 3 a.m. the day after, you know, the night after a game at a high school party at Castle Manor or whatever they call it, whatever that's called.
Castle Manor, I like that.
Manure. It is a manure, especially with all the high school kids there, and he's, you know, sitting there Snapchatting at 3 o'clock in the morning after we lost to San Diego State. Yeah. So,
and again, we brought that up several times. We're not faulting the players for, I guess, partying, because I mean, we're all college students. We all do that a little bit, like night before an exam. We've done that, but at the same time, you can see that a lot of the team did not put forth the effort last year to be that 11-2 team that we had several years ago, or even the 9-4 teams that we had. You could see them not, I guess, fully care about the football team. And I guess the question next year is whether or not that's solely the players, or maybe if that's Matt Wells himself. So, I mean, seen a couple good steps with David Yost, a couple great recruits coming in, including some JUCO players that should contribute immediately. But, I mean, let's face it, all eyes next year are on Wells.
We have 226 more days to discuss this, and I'm sure that we will cross over every square millimeter of ground that could possibly be talked about with Aggie football by then, as depressing as it may be.
Every fake blade of grass on Merlin Olsen Field.
Every single one.
We will bring you the perspective of the football team from every seat in Maverick Stadium.
That's a good idea. They all suck.
We're done.
Anyway, just taking a quick look around at other Aggie sports. We like to always end on our Aggie calendar, and that gives us a brief moment to reflect on what's going on in some of the lesser talked about Aggie sports.
Also, frankly, are our happiest teams, too.
To be totally honest.
Frankly, we should just focus on them.
We should spend more time exactly on those. And there's not a ton going on right now, really. I mean, I guess there's track, and I don't really know how much we could possibly talk about that.
Run fast, players. Run fast, people, athletes.
And there's tennis, which, to be frank, I know nothing about.
I know a little bit about that, and we're 1-1 right now. Played a good team recently, but I mean, I don't think we're going to learn a ton until a couple weeks later when we start playing some Mountain West teams. So,
but softball's coming up, going to be starting up soon. Possibly the best team that Utah State has right now, though, is the gymnastics team. And, like, this is a little-known fact. I know that not many people know this. But we're talking about a team. What, Trevor, you said that right now they're 34th in the nation?
36th, 38th, I think, one of those.
And last season they finished higher than that, I believe. This is a pretty solid gymnastics team.
Yeah, the way they rank it is they kind of go by your average of what you've had, and then, you know, they list your average and then your high. And we've only had two matches and or two meets, whatever you want to call it. And the first one was kind of the first one. You know what I mean? You're just getting out there for the first time. We have a few freshmen that compete in our rotations, and so, you know, that one was kind of low. And then we had a fairly high one. Like our high is pretty much as close to a lot of the others that are above us highs.
Yeah, so we won't sit here and talk your ear off about gymnastics, but it is worth noting that is a very good, very successful Aggie team right now. They just barely hosted their first meet of the season against North Carolina State and Bowling Green State. North Carolina State, a very good program, top 25 coming into Logan, still top 25 even after not having their greatest performance, but Utah State took first in that meet.
And up next, they play.
Yeah, going down to BYU.
So, I mean, anytime we played the devil, I mean, we've...
Yep. Also, coincidentally, the next home meet against BYU, that'll be February 3rd. So, seriously, you want to, like... And those are super entertaining. You want a super entertaining, fun way to spend an evening? Think about it.
Plus, maybe, you could go watch those, and the next time the Olympics come around, you could pretend like you actually know what the crap they're doing. Because you went to a non-Olympics gymnastics meet.
Maybe we can be like the Ute gymnast that went and pounded the cougar in the face and then at the end of her floor routine.
We could, but that was funny. While we're on the topic of Utah real quick, we don't want to be Utah. Because when we're down three, we at least want to take a three-point shot, not a two-point buzzer beater, to lose only by one.
Or be the Utah fans that cheer because they lost by one instead of three.
So let this be a lesson to you all. If you're down by 3 points, don't go for two.
Don't pull a Wooten.
Maybe the coach told them to, and they were hoping that they get an and one, maybe.
Thank you, everybody, for listening today. We really appreciate anybody who takes the time out of their day to listen to us blabber on about something that we love.
And, we don't know how you do it.
We'll be back at you again next week and the week after, and I guess I can't promise too far down the road, but...
As long as you'll actually listen to us talk crap out of our mouths...
It'll keep coming out. Yeah. Once again, this is Section 119. Find us on Twitter at 119sports. And thank you for tuning in. Go Aggies.